We're bringing you a special edition of What's News. Flags are flying at half-mast in Washington to honor the life of Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who died Friday at the age of 87. Ginsburg was a lawyer and became a pioneering figure in the fight for women's legal equality, arguing numerous cases before the high court.
Sex, like race, is a visible, immutable characteristic bearing no necessary relationship to ability. Sex, like race, has been made the basis for unjustified, or at least unproved, assumptions concerning an individual's potential to perform or to contribute to society.
She was only the second female Supreme Court justice ever on the nation's highest court, but even at her confirmation hearing in 1993, she spoke out hopefully that her appointment would lead to more diversity.
I expect to see 3, 4, perhaps even more women on the high court bench, women not shaped from the same mold, but of different complexions.
Joining me now is Wall Street Journal legal affairs reporter Brent Kendall. Hi, Brent. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Brent, it's tough to know where to start, but I think something that's so striking about Ruth Bader Ginsburg is she experienced so many of the things she would spend her career fighting for, particularly women's rights. When she started at Harvard Law School in 1956, she was one of just 9 women in a class of 500. I mean, that's pretty incredible to think about now.
It's true. I mean, both in life and the law, I mean, the country has seen a pretty dramatic evolution over the time through her legal career, and she's sort of embodied and been along for the ride for all of that.
Ginsburg worked as a law professor, and before she got a seat on the Supreme Court, she argued cases before the high court, and again, the major through line was equal rights. Tell us about some of the highlights of those times before she got appointed.
Well, I mean, it was a big early focus of her career, was sort of this whole idea of equal rights and having men and women treated equally in the eyes of the law. And so, she was a leading lawyer in that campaign and sometimes approached things in ways that were outside of the box, including by representing male clients in cases in which they were being discriminated against and denied benefits that at the time were only available to women. So, I mean, she had sort of an innovative approach for how to delicately kind of work through the law and pick and choose cases that would be the kinds of things that you could do case by case to move the law in the direction she wanted it, knowing that, these kinds of changes build over years and decades and that it was a long road and not something that was going to all change overnight.
Let's talk about when she got to the Supreme Court. She was appointed by former President Bill Clinton in 1993, the second woman to become a justice on the high court after Sandra Day O'Connor. Brent, tell us about some of the key cases in her career as a Supreme Court justice.
She was a leading liberal figure and became even a pop culture icon, but spent a lot of her career in the minority on a conservative court. And so a lot of times you'd see she and other members of the liberal bloc prevailing in cases where they could, attract votes of moderate conservatives along the way. I mean, some of her biggest majority opinions, she wrote opinions that, were of the same, in the same spirit from when she was a lawyer, including in 1996 when she wrote a decision that forced the Virginia Military Institute to admit women. One of her biggest dissents was in a 2007 case, in which the court limited the ability of women in the workplace to sue for sex discrimination. And she read her dissent from the bench and it received widespread attention. And it eventually spurred Congress to act and lawmakers changed prior law to effectively, undo what the court had done and allow women to bring the kinds of sex discrimination claims that the court said that they could not bring under prior law.
As you mentioned, she was a leading voice on the court's liberal wing, but she also was able to find common ground with conservative members, including her friend, Justice Antonin Scalia, who died in 2016. Brent, how significant was her work reaching across the aisle, so to speak?
Justice Ginsburg and Justice Scalia were kind of the classic odd couple, but they sort of demonstrated that, by and large, the justices really do like one another and forge bonds with one another, and it doesn't always cut along liberal and conservative lines, and that, on the court, you can respect and spar with your intellectual opponents and still and still be close with them when you're off the bench. You know, in some areas of the law, Justice Ginsburg was quite liberal, but in other areas of the law, she was pretty center of the road. I mean, there were a variety of cases in which she would join rulings, you know, including conservatives that sided with big business. So, I mean, she, in some ways, a little complicated to typecast. And as with most justices, they'd find common ground more often than not. You know, and I would say another just really big impact she had on the court was she was one of the court's fastest workers. Cases that needed to be handled quickly or that you could pretty well count on when the court had a sitting in a given month and started issuing opinions that hers was going to be one of the first ones that came out. She was a quick writer, fast thinker, and tireless worker who was known to do a lot of these things even in the middle of the night.
When Justice Scalia died in 2016, the Republican majority in the Senate refused to hold confirmation hearings for President Obama's nominee Merrick Garland because it was an election year. There are already calls from Democrats to uphold that precedent in this case. Brent, should we expect a political battle ahead over this vacancy now?
It's hard to imagine a more intense political battle than this is likely to be. I mean, you know, her death comes just so close to a presidential election in which the country is deeply divided and the candidates are bitterly divided and the Supreme Court is closely divided and President Trump has made the court a big issue of his campaign and has touted his past nominees as among his biggest accomplishments. We just finished up a huge term for the Supreme Court with lots of blockbuster cases, and we have more on the horizon, including another one on the future of the Affordable Care Act. And depending on how that case turns out, you know, we may or may not end up with the sweeping federal health law anymore. So, I mean, there's a lot of near-term consequences for the law. There are bigger, broader issues at stake, including those as like on abortion rights. You know, and Democrats are still really angry at how Republicans handled the Garland situation and keeping that seat open for the final year of President Obama's term so President Trump could fill that seat. And so, you know, you can just expect that to escalate this time.
President Trump has already made two appointments to the U.S. Supreme Court, giving it a conservative majority. If he did make another appointment, and he's already put out a list of potential nominees, how would that shift the balance of the court?
I mean, if he gets to fill this seat, I mean, it is a real game changer. I mean, he has had two nominees. They've both filled other conservative seats, those of Antonin Scalia and Anthony Kennedy. And the court has become more conservative because Justice Kennedy was kind of a maverick, middle-of-the-road conservative who was a true swing vote who sided with liberals in lots of cases. And so now that he's retired and Brett Kavanaugh has replaced him, the court has become somewhat more conservative. But it's still been a 5-4 court with 5 conservatives and 4 liberals. If the president fills this seat, you're suddenly looking at a 6-3 court. And that'd be a much different kind of balance than we've seen in a long time, where 5-4 has been kind of the prevailing dynamic for quite some time. So, I mean, it's hard to overstate, you know, the potential impact if President Trump fills this seat, or, you know, the consequences, no matter which way this turns out.
Justice Ginsburg was 87 years old, and in recent years, she became quite popular with a younger generation of women. There was a movie about her life on the basis of sex. She also earned the nickname Notorious RBG, a nod there to the late rapper Notorious B.I.G. Here's what she had to say about that during an interview.
Well, first, I think I should explain what I have in common with the Notorious B.I.G. There's something quite important. We were both born and bred in Brooklyn, New York.
But it wasn't just pop culture, Brent. We saw her face on protest signs at women's rallies. What do you think her legacy will be?
I think her overarching legacy will be as a champion for women's rights and just this, you know, broader leading figure for equality and equal treatment of all. You know, and she crossed over into the public consciousness into a way that most Supreme Court justices do not, and was widely admired from people across generations and, you know, from people across ideologies. And it's not just liberals who admired her. I mean, she's widely regarded as someone who just lived a remarkable life and persevered at times when there were so many things stacked against her to rise to just, you know, the top of her profession and to do profound things that have had, you know, a profound impact on the law and on generations of men and women who admired her and just her tenacity and her positive spirit.
That's Wall Street Journal legal affairs reporter Brent Kendall joining me for a special edition of What's News. Thank you for listening.